I'm joined here today by Rory Campbell, the owner of CNN Sporting Risk, a company that specialises in analytics and giving advice to football clubs, is that right?
Football clubs, betting organisations and bet ourselves, yeah.
Would you like to, well, basically elaborate, give us some of your background, please?
So the company has actually only been running 2 years, but it was a way of us of kind of incorporating all of our interests in sports analytics across all the sectors that we've got background in, or I've got background in, and that includes betting, provision of models to organisations that have demand for sports analytics models, and that includes football clubs, betting organisations and insurance companies. We started 2 years ago, although my background in analytics and in betting goes back way beyond that. I left uni 9 years ago. I graduated from Oxford doing politics, philosophy and economics. And I graduated having also spent the majority of my degree time playing poker and watching football and betting on football. And kind of while everyone else was going off to get a normal job or an internship at a big bank, I kind of decided it would be a lot easier to carry on playing poker when the games were really good in London. And that kind of entrance into the world of betting, I guess, just and having a huge interest in football and maths naturally gravitated me towards betting and trying to understand how you improve and understand and predict football better by using underlying numbers in measuring and predicting and improving performance. And that has taken me down a road of sports betting, both small and big, in different periods of my life. Sports betting with other people as part of a syndicate, and also work for various different football clubs on consultancy around player recruitment and tactical insights. And I think eventually we wanted to put all of that under one umbrella, and that's what we are currently doing. So, you know, I think we kind of thought that our models and models that I built for betting and added to with experience of working with clubs could have value of being used by third parties such as clubs and other companies in the space, whilst also using some models of my own and other people to continue to bet as individuals and as a syndicate.
Okay, it's interesting. A lot of the people I've spoken to that are successful in this sort of business have got sort of done their earned their stripes through poker. Do you still play?
Not as much as I used to, no. The games in London, I was lucky. When I was 18, 19, 20, it was the real golden time of poker in London. Really big games, soft, but you know, you don't like to say that, but they were. And going on all 24/7, 365 days of the year. And that seems to have died now. I think it's like anything, nothing stays easy forever. Everyone got very good very quickly. Games got quite hard to beat. Financial issues of kind of getting money in and out of casinos became harder in the UK, and I think also just got quite bored and wanted to move on to something that I was more interested in, which is sport and using numbers to try and understand and predict sport better.
And you mentioned that you thought after you graduated that it would be easier to make money gambling. Wouldn't it have been easier to get a nice job in the city make money that way?
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't know where that would have taken me, but I do think it's definitely not easy. Is actually probably the wrong word. I think when I was naive and young, I thought it was easy, but nothing's easy if you want to do it and get to the top of what you field you're in. I think playing poker at that time, I think I presumed it, that gambling in general was easy. I was wrong, and I've had periods where I've had to learn that the hard way, but I think you have to enjoy what you do. And if you're in a space that is hard, I think the opportunity that you have to gain when you can spot a competitive advantage is probably bigger. And I think that's the space we see ourselves in now.
So from what I've read, you specialise in analytics as opposed to statistics, which has put you into the professional bracket. Can you tell us the thinking behind that, please?
Well, I guess we'd like to think we specialise in both statistics and analytics, but I think we definitely like to see them, or I like to see them, as two separate things. And I think, you know, analytics or statistics has got quite a it's taken a while to penetrate professional football, certainly. It's taken a while to penetrate it being used as a kind of tool to understand and commentate or understand and analyse football. And I think a lot of that is that the early rise of data in football, people got very confused by trying to use statistics to understand the game. And actually, we try to take statistics. There's a big difference for me between statistics and numbers. Statistics are pieces of information that happened in the past. They can be very interesting. Some of them mean nothing, some of them mean a lot. And I mean something in terms of translating it for future performance. We try to take every single piece of data we've got and turn that into some kind of predictive value. And a lot of data isn't very predictive because it just tells you something interesting about the past. So if you take a football match, and this is being quite basic about it, but there's a lot of, you could do a lot of analysis on passing data that will tell you very interesting things about how players played. But when they're going in to play another game against a completely different team, in a completely different context with different players, then that translating that into predicting future performance actually isn't very useful. So I think it's always been key for us. Every kind of model development we make, every model iteration we make is it improving our predictability? Because that's what we're after. We're not after just telling an interesting story about the game that happened. We're after trying to understand that game to be able to translate that into predicting what happens in the future better.
So is your main business trying to predict individual games or long-term outcomes, as in league positions?
Well, if I think, like everyone would probably say, then if bookmakers want to open up and take huge bets on outright markets, then it could be the latter. But at the moment, obviously, it's predicting individual games. But we do have long-term simulation markets, and I've touched on other bits of the business at the start. And there's the commercial deals around where teams finish in the league now, promotion, relegation, there's a lot of kind of financial incentive and risk management that clubs can employ around that. And I think using some of our models to help clubs understand that is definitely a value. So it's a part of the business, but of course, on the core betting side, betting at the size we do is always going to be mainly focused around individual games.
Okay, for the layman, can you just explain in a nutshell, a couple of nutshells, how the Asian handicap betting works?
As in what it actually means?
How is it compared to when your normal guy goes into the betting shop and just picks up?
Yeah. Okay. Well, so the main reason for people like us using the Asian handicap market as opposed to using the 1-2x market is liquidity. There's obviously much bigger liquidity on the Asian handicap market, and it's, I guess, the simplest way to explain it to layman would be a way of kind of trying to find a expected gap between the two teams that would bring it closer to a 50-50 contest, would be how I'd articulate the markets we're getting on at. So I think if you take tonight, Man City are playing Brighton and they'll be 2.25 goal favourites. So if we bet Man City and they win 1-0, we lose. If they win 3-0, we win.
So when you crunch the numbers, do you do it before you get the team news or after?
Well, we'd like to think both. I think it's interesting. I think there's a betting pre-match, I think there's a number of different games that can be played. I think if you look at when prices open up, for example, so let's take games on a Saturday, prices open a Monday through the week. We would like to think that those early prices are obviously probably beatable by a fairly basic statistical model, because the market hasn't yet been informed by a combination of models that are going to push it closer to what we would think the right price would be. And that's probably what a model similar-ish to us would have as the right price. So in that sense, I think you wouldn't even, if you were just trying to beat that market, you could probably just get on for small amounts and not overly worry about team use, because the market could be out by so much often enough for you to maximise that as an edge. The time at the moment that we're having to trade, which is obviously a lot closer to kickoff because of the size, we obviously have a predicted lineup and we simulate the games using those predicted lineups. And then in certain cases, we would wait for team news and be able to do that again. But I think my personal opinion is that a lot of team news we're seeing in the price before the teams are out a lot more often than we were before.
I mean, would you factor in what you consider to be bad management at the helm of the team with your decision making before you have a bet.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's big. We like to think like I don't believe like we're definitely betting in the late markets. I don't believe that we're essentially a somewhere around an expected goals model or an expected goals impact model or an expected player impact model, whatever you want to call it. We've got different models, but I don't think a basic expected goals model would beat the market late on. I think the volatility in the market is too big, and also I think when an expected goals model, when it's beating the late price, which is pretty close to what an expected goals model would deem the right price, it's when it's beating it, it's probably beating it by 3 or 4%, and when it's wrong, it's probably out by a lot bigger. So it has to be right a lot more than it can be wrong. So I think the different things like team suitability, team style, managerial style, and being able to try and model that is a much bigger advantage. You have to think like what you're competing against. And if we think that the closing price, if we're betting pre-match and we think the closing price is being driven by something that's close to an expected goals model, where we're competing against an expected goals model because that's what we need to beat. Whereas if we thought the closing price was being dictated by the league table and previous results, then we'd obviously see expected goals as a competitive advantage for us on top of that. But if the late price or the closing price is being driven by what's close to an expected goals model price, then that's what we're competing against. We have to move beyond that and using things like trying to model managerial and individual player performance and suitability, I think, becomes part of that.
Okay, and the final bit on this, I imagine you'd be betting to a fairly small margin over a period of 12 months. Have you sort of worked out what just pure bad luck factors into that percentage?
Yeah, quite big. I mean, I think we're actually having a losing season. I think, although we probably made some mistakes this year, I think that you could quite easily have an edge on the market with over the sample of about 1,000 bets that we're having across the major leagues and lose. I don't think that's that unusual. And it's variance. Variance in football is just huge. It's a low-scoring game. There's huge volatility in pre-match prices, and luck accounts for a huge part. But I've always taken the view that luck's a good thing. If there was no luck involved, then there wouldn't be a market because everyone would be able to perfectly predict the outcome. So luck is I try to embrace luck. It's hard when things aren't going well to not kind of curse how unlucky you're getting, but over the long run you've got to think that luck, I always thought this, someone said this to me when I started playing poker when I was about 18, said never ever moan about getting unlucky, because you getting unlucky means that the reason poker players have made more money than chess players have, say, I don't know if that's actually true, but probably, is that if I play the best chess player in the world 100 times, he's going to beat me 100 times. But if I play someone quite bad at poker, heads up, 100 times, then he's still going to win a fair share of the time. So, and that, people getting lucky enables them to convince themselves that they might have an edge and they might be good, and that's what keeps the game flowing. And that's why I think the football betting markets are, some of the biggest in the world, because there's huge volatility and it's very easy for everyone to convince themselves they have an edge. So it's hard, but we try to embrace luck.
So Rory, you talked about originally just interested in betting, etc. So what pushes a recreational punter into the domain of being a professional?
Good question. I don't know. I mean, part of me feels that who am I or who's anyone to tell anyone what makes them professional? I think the key thing would be to say that I would say is you really have to understand what you're trying to do. So if you take football, there is just a big difference. We have people that work for us that, understand football on a tactical level, on a kind of nuanced level better than I might. But being able to turn that into beating a market really is a different game. So I think understanding exactly what you're trying to do is probably the most important thing. And I think judging whether or not, determining what your edge is, right? If you think you've got a huge edge in the kind of building a model that could win over a large sample, then right, that edge we can probably take on a small size to beat the early prices. if we think we've got, if you think you've got a huge edge in understanding the way markets move, then find the optimal way to exploit that later on when liquidity is big and you can hedge. I mean, I think it's just the key thing would be very, very honest with yourself and understanding about what your edge is and where that comes from and how big that is and what's the best way to exploit it. I think it's very easy for people, for example, to say, have one winning season betting in the Premier League and say, okay, that's great, I beat the Tuesday prices in the Premier League, right, now I'm going to kind of scale out and bet every league in Europe and I'm going to do it on a bigger scale and I'm going to try and take on the huge money on the day of the game. So like understanding where your edge is probably the most important thing. And then the key thing I say would probably not be to get too big too quickly and, you know, understand the limits of what you're trying to do.
Okay, talk about you need to really understand the game you're involved in, but what sort of level are we talking about knowledge and hard work that's required to beat it like you guys do?
Well, a lot, yeah. I mean, I've always taken the approach that all information is good information. We have qualitative guys that work for us to input numbers, very different to the quant guys that work for us that you know, building and adding to the models that we've already got. And the hard work in generating all that information is of course essential. But the big, big thing I think is understanding what all that information means. And I think that's where a lot of people, you know, can fall down, is that they take on board, they try to get involved in the data side of it without actually understanding how predictive it is. What does that mean? How does that translate into future performance? So I think being very clear about the information you've got and what it actually means is probably the most important thing in terms of hard work. And that's, the truth is that's a thing about management, isn't it? I mean, it's like being a football manager. A football manager needs to pick a team to win a game. He's got lots of different pieces of information. He's got previous results. He's got watching the players. He's got coaches around him. He's got an opinion. He's got data on the players. If he uses that, he's got an opposition assessment. He's got so much information, but at the end of the day, he has to make a decision. So it's putting together all the information you've got at your disposal and deciding what's the most important thing for that exact context or that exact situation.
So as somebody that beats the market, looking at the
stats... Did last year, this year less so, but yeah.
What is it you think that clubs and coaches get wrong?
A lot. It's interesting because, you know, I became fascinated by analytics or even just started as data in football. And I kind of initially thought about it, you know, I'd obviously conceptualised it in terms of betting because that's an easy way to conceptualise it because you've got an obvious way to judge its success, you've got a market. And I think it's almost harder to take it to like conceptualise it in clubs and think about how we're going to evaluate its success. But I think part of the reason that data hasn't really penetrated clubs is that there was a confusion over what analytics was and what statistics was. I think a lot of clubs got bogged down by using meaningless data that actually wasn't helping them improve performance or understand their team performance better. If you think about it, if you take the kind of stage of like using data, right? So you've got understanding it and understanding what it means. So that to me is like taking data, turning it into some kind of like, let's say expected goals, we've got expected goals value, right? That's great. So we understand what happened in the past. Then I've got turning that into predictive value. So that's what essentially happens in betting. But then for clubs, it's almost different. It's understanding where you are. It's understanding where you want to get to and then trying to use the tools at your disposal to bridge that gap in the middle. So I've always thought as a club, clubs should be thinking about data slightly differently. You've obviously got basic statistical measures of players that you can use to evaluate their performance and evaluate whether they're good or bad. And as long as you understand the data set you're using, that is perfectly valuable. And you can use them to not just evaluate their talent, but also how they suit your team or your league or the opposition you're playing. But I think one key thing I think all clubs should be doing is saying, you know, football clubs operate in an environment, as I said, with huge variability and not a lot of goals in games, not a lot of games in the season. So I think trying to use analytics to like almost try to like build more tangible objectives is where they're lacking. So if I'm a club that wants to finish in the Champions League finish in the top four of the league, so I'm probably going to have to get a certain number of points. But you can start to use analytics to work back to say if I'm going to have this number of points, we're probably going to need to score this number of goals. we're probably going to need to get away with conceding this number. That means we're probably going to have these number of shots from these number of from these areas. Same with conceded, and start to use it to like drill down to like right, what do we actually need to do on the pitch, right, to give ourselves the best opportunity to get into the top four. And where are we now on those performance metrics? And then there's a number of talents that would probably move out of the analytics space in terms of, you know, looking at coaching and implementing traditional scouting through player recruitment. But I think using analytics should be able to give them the framework to be able to, you know, understand their objective and understand, you know, their chance of getting there and giving themselves the maximum opportunity of getting there.
Is it in every major club's fabric now that they've got an analysis sort of covered? Or?
Well, no, it would be in every club that they'd have analysis covered. I don't know, that doesn't mean it's being done right. I don't think that the level of analytics that we would talk about or we would think about with some of our models, that I'd say there'd be very, very few clubs that would be using that. And also there's a big difference in using them and using them to influence decision making. Clubs might be using them, you know, and doing it, but who knows whether that's actually driving what happens on a match day or signing a player in the summer.
So the teams that you know for a fact are using people that to your level. Have you noticed a marked improvement in their performance?
Well, I think there's, you know, it's quite common knowledge that Liverpool invested quite a lot in the, definitely the people. I think we've got some very smart people there working analytics. It would seem to me, you know, we would look at some of the players they've signed and say they definitely stood out for us from an analytical model perspective. So intuitively, you would say that they are having a role and there's some good stuff going on there. But you don't know. I know Man City and Arsenal also invest a lot in it, but whether or not it's driving recruitment decisions, I don't know.
You can not compete against just an individual market, but enormous and incredibly successful professional syndicates, the Asian line. What makes you think you can beat them over time?
Belief, I guess. Thinking, you know, I like to think that nothing's ever perfect and no one ever solves anything, and as long as you're consistently trying to improve how you're working, then, you know, I don't think you'd ever kind of limit yourself by saying someone's too big for you to be.
One of the attributes you need in any sort of gambling is a fair bit of self-confidence and a strong character. Do you consider yourself that you have that?
Yeah, I guess so. I think you probably have to.
And is that sort of a help or a hindrance? Well, I assume it's a help in the game of professional gambling. How do you manage people that you've employed for their skill in analytics to cope with the mindset?
It's interesting. Firstly, is it a skill? Is it a good thing? Yes, but it can definitely be a bad thing as well. I think one thing, when you're in a world where you're like, you know, in some ways to the outside world, we can come on to talk about the processes for evaluating success, but you're in a world where there is a kind of instantaneous like statement of how well you're doing every single game, right? You know, you win or you lose. And so I think dealing with that and having the character deal with that, it's a fine line between dealing with it and being stubborn and kind of loyal to what you've done, but also having the ability to be able to say, we might have got this wrong and we need to evaluate and move on. In terms of managing people, I think I definitely think and this is just talking particularly on betting, I think if you're using, my personal view is if you're using a solely model based approach and you're working as a team, I think division of responsibility is massive in terms of having quants in charge of building the models, but then having like a kind of almost like not a separate team, but someone independent of them that can say, that can interpret models and be able to use them to bet. Because I think it's very easy for, if you're like in the kind of day-to-day, hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute, working with the data, becoming very loyal to certain principles, and it's important to not get bogged down by that and be able to think outside of that. So I think we like to try and keep, you know, people that are working on kind of long-term improving models out of the day-to-day stress and responsibility. And then also, you know, even we have qualitative guys that do a lot of work, even though it is numerical, but on working on team ratings and stuff. And I think in the past, and maybe even this year, actually made the mistake of them having too much involvement on the kind of what is the stressful end, essentially. And I think really, ideally, if you've got, you have to manage the character, and I think most people do struggle in very stressful environments, so you probably want to give them the optimal conditions to be able to work at their best and think outside the box at their best, because that's what we want them to do. And I think it's hard to think outside the box when you're under stress every single day to make, you know, trading decisions or be around, you know, a kind of trading environment. So I think having that kind of that separation of some degree is important.
How do you deal with the losing, winning runs, and at what point do you evaluate whether you've been successful or not?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think evaluating your success and when you're on the right side, when you're on the wrong side, is the most important thing, and getting that right. You know, I think for getting distracted, not distracted is the wrong word, but getting obsessed with using your P&L to judge the success of what you're doing is definitely wrong. And I almost think it's impossible to avoid, but like, if you could avoid looking at your day-to-day P&L, for example, if you're going to become a professional punter in any space, if you could avoid looking at your day-to-day P&L, I'd say that's probably an advantage. Having the ability to be able to do that, I would say. How do you deal with winning and losing runs? As I said, the important thing is understanding how you're evaluating what you're doing. Now, we would probably, if you've got a scale of evaluating, you've got a P&L as your 100% way of evaluating success, and you've got 0%, we would be somewhere on that scale. We would like to think that we have enough confidence in our retrospective numbers from games to be able to judge whether we were on the right side or the wrong side. But it's difficult, and there's no doubt that when things aren't going right in terms of results, that people, you do doubt yourself, and everyone's human. I'm human, and people that work for us are human, and what's the important thing is deciding the line when you actually are using results to say we're getting something right, we're getting something wrong. So last season we had an excellent season, really good, best we've ever had, and I'm of the view that you should never, when things are going really well, you should never think they can't get any better, and when things are going really badly, you should never think that you have to change it, right? So even at the end of last season, we made a few changes to the way we were doing things, because we thought that was, we were still looking to maximise our edge even further, I guess, and branch out and get bigger. And this year we've had a very bad season. And are we going to be, at the end of the season, rip it up and go back to what we did last season? No. Are we going to try and learn from maybe some of the mistakes we made? Yes. But I think, you know, you have to be realistic that you're in a game of massively high variance, and you do just need a huge sample of bets to be able to judge, if you're using a strict process, to be able to judge whether or not you're on the right side. And I know this is a kind of long-winded way of not really answering the question, but your method for evaluating whether you're successful is the most important thing. I don't think it should solely be the P&L, but over 5,000, 10,000 bets, it's probably going to have to be, because, you know, I don't think anyone can get through that and not, you know, just want to not be doing this anymore. So, but over a small sample, I think it's the danger of overreacting to good and bad runs can be a really kind of dangerous thing to happen to people in this game, I would say. So I think the important thing is not to overreact, but I think it's impossible in any game, or have anyone with a human functioning brain with a strong character, not to think things are amazing when you're winning and doubt things when you're losing, and trying to be as neutral and as loyal to the process when it comes to that is important. I also think, and this is, you know, even if so there's people who are just professional punters and they just operate on their own, a one-man band, they've got their own strategy they think works well. I do think it helps to have people around you who you can bounce ideas off, and people who could be a lot more objective than you might be able to be. And going back to me saying about, you have, if you've got quant people around you who have nothing to do with the day-to-day decision-making, but they can take a long-term view on things, having people around you like that, I think it's quite helpful, because I think it's impossible when you're in it not to get in some way bogged down by the results. And having a structure around you, even be informal or formal, where you can bounce ideas or use other people's opinions to evaluate that is a good thing.
Okay, thank you. For the people watching this, could you just give us an idea of your punting week as a firm?
This year we took an approach to, last year we bet more leagues. We took an approach this year to focus on the big leagues. So I automated betting some of the smaller leagues earlier in the week, and then we are betting day of the game on the big four leagues and the English Championship for slightly smaller. There's obviously games all the time. Our models continually update, and we kind of run simulations that are for games coming up all the time. And then we still do have, I'd like to say that we get closer and closer to an automated process, but I still don't think that's easy, and it may not even be right. So there is constant dialogue between people that are involved in updating and improving the models, myself, other people involved at top level of the company, and guys on the qualitative side. So hard to say what exact structure is, but you know, in terms of betting, it's those leagues and automated stuff on some smaller leagues.
It's a high pressure business, as you've already said. I think everybody knows. Can you see yourself in this business forever, or is there an exit strategy for something less taxing?
I think my missus would like to say the latter. I don't know if you put that in there, but I think, you know, my personal, you know, my interest in all of this probably came less through betting. That was an obvious way to kind of, professionalise an interest in football or sports analytics. And we, you know, I like to think that as a company we could grow into the analytics space that can service different parts of the game or different parts of the sport, different parts of the industry that have a need or will have a growing need for understanding performance and predicting performance better. And I think that, you know, that includes football clubs. You know, I think, you know, if you look at analytics, I think it was obvious that in the space in football was always going to penetrate first with betting, because it's the easiest way, not the easiest way, so that's the wrong way of putting it, but it's the way that you're going to get the quickest, you're probably going to get the quickest way of saying this works, because you've got an obvious way of judging it, not the way we would judge it, but the P&L, if it is good, you can say, oh, this works. But if you're a club, I think it's going to take a longer period of time to understand how and why and the optimal way to make it work. But eventually, over time, I think clubs will gravitate towards that. And I think that we as a company would like to be in a place where we can service and, you know, act as the sports analytics or football analytics company that optimises a lot of those things for different companies and different tranches of the industry, I guess.
Okay, so finally, somebody at Oxford now just finishing their degree, would you recommend the career choice?
I don't know. Depends on your character. Yeah, it depends on your character. Some people, I think, you know, you've probably... Tricky. Very, very tricky. I think it does take a particular mindset to enjoy it, you know. And, you know, sometimes I can say that I enjoy it even when we lose, but because... I think the right way to describe it is that as a career choice, I think you have to enjoy the process, and you have to enjoy the process of improving and iterating and getting to a point where you think you're getting closer and closer to that point of solving what is a big problem. You're trying to solve how to understand and predict football. It's hard, really, really hard. So I think you have to enjoy that process. And I do think, you know, I always thought, it's interesting, I think the mindset required for being a poker player and a sports bettor are different. And that's why I don't think I could have ever been like a top, top, top poker player. Because I do think you have to have a level of game theory and relentless gamble in you to be able to seize real high pressure, high advantage moments. Where I think sports betting is probably more about being loyal to and understanding the process of what you do, and understanding the process of evaluating whether what you do is right. And whilst that also applies in poker, I just think on the scale that skews to be more important in betting, and or betting if you're using statistical modelling anyway. So Would I recommend it to anyone? I don't know. I think it definitely takes a unique character.
Johnny Ward presents The Front Runner in association with starsports.bet. 18 and over. Be gamble aware.